Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about RotoBaller.com. Win big in 2022 with RotoBaller.com's MLB and DFS Premium Pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use RotoBaller's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value displays, research stations, lineup optimizer, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, get your MLB Premium Pass for an extra 10% off with your discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com, use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A for 10% off the Premium Pass for the MLB season, and get started to rotoballing like a boss. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 10. Gonna talk about some recent news, some pitchers mulligans, which are always fun to talk about, some weekend matchups, and much, much more to get you ready for the upcoming fantasy baseball action. You can find myself on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Fantastic. It was a momentous day today. You sent me a text earlier this afternoon saying, hey, Southwest has a deal for Phoenix, and we secured at least one way there, our tickets for our airplane tickets for First Pitch Arizona in November. So that is always an awesome thing to look forward to. So I know we'll probably talk about it a bunch leading up to it, but at least got the one-way ticket. So that's super exciting. Got some good deals with Southwest. So I appreciate the heads up, my friend.
No problem. No problem. I tweeted it out too. I told people, like, if hey, this is like one thing, like I told people would, you know, like I can't afford the trip or I can't do that. I get it. It you know, airfare is not cheap and everything. But if you start spreading it out, start now, it makes it a lot easier than one large chunk later. That's the way I look at it. So if you can start putting it together, it works very well. By the time you're listening to this, sale's probably over. Sorry, but I hope you guys enjoyed it. And if not, there'll be more to come because we'd love to have you out there. It's an awesome time. We've talked about it before. And like Ryan said, we will exhaust you guys on it by the time it actually happens, because it is actually what people say it is. It's awesome. So we will do all that.
It is. More. It is. And I have no skin in the game. I don't make money from it. I just want to see people hang out with them. And yeah, so it's good to get that ticket. And I've got like, what, 5 months to build up some parent points and take the kids for some nights and, you know, kind of get some points on my side before I head out for a few days. So I'm excited. I do need to remember one of the years I forgot. I always, for whatever reason, I typically just book like 2 one-ways. I forgot to book my return flight. And I realized like 2 days before I was going to Arizona that I'd never booked a flight back, which I mean, wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world, but would have been tough to break that news to the wife. But,
yeah, I've always said I want to retire in Scottsdale. So if that's the way it happens, so be it. Like we can make this happen. But
got to remember that this year, flight back.
Well, trust me, something tells me I'll be texting you when another sale comes on to get the flight back. We'll figure something out. But we have plenty of time for that. That is in the first week in November for those that keep track at home. So plenty of time to get you guys ready for that. But let's talk about some recent news. And as usual, it's usually not good news. That's just the way things go. And Tyler Stevenson, who's been actually one of the more productive catchers in baseball this season, got hit in the hand on a foul ball, I believe. Fractured hand, out 4 to 6 weeks. This is devastating. Like, it is what it is. There's nothing you can do about it, but it's a big blow. They called up Chris Oakey, who's been hitting in the minors decently right now. So what's your thoughts on this Cincinnati Reds situation?
It's brutal. I mean, yeah, you were saying, Bubba, Stevenson's been fantastic. He really has. He was our, for HQ so far this season, he's our number two catcher overall behind Wilson Contreras. Five homers, .309 batting average, 21 runs and 31 RBI from ADP of like 140. He's going like maybe ninth, 10th round as a catcher. That's that is a lot of production that you're losing. It's going to be interesting. Like, I don't have Stevenson anywhere, what the decision is with him, cut or hold. I'm glad I don't have to make that decision, because it's a tricky one, because that's a lot of production that you're losing. But I mean, in terms of like replacements, there's really nothing here. I mean, Cincinnati is spread so thin already. They basically have gutted this team for this season. It looks like it's going to be Aramis Garcia filling in, and that is not who you want to target, even in a two catcher league. Guy has like a 30-35% strikeout rate in the minors with some power, but I just can't see that minor league strikeout rate carrying over too well as a catcher. So I would probably just avoid the Cincinnati catching situation right now, unless it's a really good week for streaming. So
yeah, I remember Aramis Garcia was one of the Giants' top catching prospects at one point in time before Joey Bart showed up. I saw him in San Jose. He was a masher. Once he kind of got to Double A and Triple A, the strikeout started coming in bunches. It was one of those things where the talent changed, and now he's been with the A's. He's been like on four different teams since the Giants, just kind of making his way around. So he's got some pop. And in that ballpark, you never know. Like in deep, deep leagues, I could see he's got a pulse. Let's put it that way. It's just not pretty, like you said. You don't want to go there. I'm curious to see what they do with this, Chris. I hope I'm Oki. It could be okay. I don't know. It's O-K-E-Y. I apologize now.
Gotta, but he was hitting pretty. I would think.
I think Oki too, but he's been hitting pretty decently in AAA, so maybe it's more a platoon thing, something to keep an eye on. But yeah, it's rough. But on the bright side, this is what you call a transition in the game. There is a catching target you can add this week. And he's in the form of the Toronto Blue Jays and Gabriel Moreno, because Danny Jansen goes down with an injury, and it sucks because every time Jansen starts to hit, he gets hurt. It's just like we're waiting. They're making it work with Kirk DHing and catching. Jansen's still getting a lot of playing time. He's very productive. So Gabriel Moreno gets called up, big-time prospect in the Jay system. And you'd have to imagine he's taking Jansen's role, essentially. But how are you looking at this? I know I saw a thread with you and Jeff Erickson. I believe it was an AL Labor that you guys have some catchers to discuss. So what's your thoughts on Gabriel Moreno?
Yeah, so Erickson, it's mixed labor, so 15-team mixed. Erickson had Tyler Stevenson, and I've got Danny Jansen, and we were both lamenting the fact that the waiver wire on catchers is terrible, and it came up that, yeah, Gabriel Moreno is going to be available this weekend, and it's kind of like that showdown now between me and Jeff. We both have that need. Who's going to bid more aggressively on Moreno? Because it's, it's kind of weird. Like Moreno, he is going to play. I mean, he was our number one overall fantasy prospect in Toronto, and we gave him an 8A rating. So for those of you not familiar with the HQ ratings, 8A basically means you have a super high floor and a chance to be pretty good, like 8 out of 10 on your upside and an A grade for your floor. So we really like the skills it's the plate skills, really, fantasy wise, that are interesting to me. The strikeout rate has been great at AAA this year, 17%, 15% in AA last year. He walks a ton. We'll see about the power. That's the one thing where, like with Moreno, I don't know how much power he's going to bring to the table. Had 8 homers in AA, 145 plate appearances last year, just one homer in 150 plate appearances in AAA. So that, and the fact that just typically catchers, it's just such an adjustment to not only learn major league hitting, but also have to pick up your own rotation. Because I do think Moreno is going to catch more often than not. He may DH every now and then. Typically, that transition is really tough. And Bubba, I mean, you just mentioned Joey Bart just got sent down and was like, I mean, the catching prospect. So I need to think about it a little bit more. I don't know if Jeff's listening to the pod, but I might be a little tepid in my bidding for Moreno and not go all out and maybe go more of like a streaming schedule thing for catchers. I just don't know if that power is going to translate for Moreno, and just in general, like that transition from minors to majors for a catcher is really tough compared to your typical position player.
Two things. I'm 100% positive Jeff is not going to listen because he's in Ireland on a family vacation doing way more important things than listen to our show.
It's a long flight.
Yeah, it's true. You never know. But secondly, I'm kind of with you on this one. Like, the prospect's cool. We've seen the crash and burns from so many. Like, we've talked about it before. Some pay off great. Some don't. Most don't. And especially in the catcher's world, it's gnarly. Even Adley Rutschman, like, besides the triple in his first game, I haven't heard a lot of Adley Rutschman buzz. I haven't even looked at his numbers, but I'll tell you this much. He's not really talked about often. So he's not lighting the world on fire. It's just one of those things, like, especially at the catcher's position, they're more concerned about learning how to call a baseball game. Like, because that's not what you do in college. Like, there's so many little things that they have to figure out to do. So that's a big move. I think you can stream. Like, I know it's 15 teams, so it's really bad. But, like, even Kurt Casale has been somewhat serviceable. Cal Raleigh's been serviceable. You can find guys out there. It's not great by any means. And some weeks might just be better taking the zero from Danny Jansen than the alternative. But there's options that I think I'd rather save money for something else. I'm kind of with you on that one. It's not the – some people – and like I always say with prospects, someone's going to like them way more than you. So, like, don't stress about it type thing.
So. Adley Rutschman, 61 plate appearances, hitting 145, 5 runs, 0 RBI, and obviously 0 home runs. And that's Adley Rutschman. So, I mean, obviously just case by case, but yeah, there's a lot more potential for this to go bad, I think, than good. That said, so I am kind of talking myself out of him. That said, prospect pedigree in that lineup at catcher, like, I mean, I get it. It's kind of interesting. Toronto also has, I mean, Zach, they called up Zach Collins, and Zach Collins is on the roster there. I think unless they send him back down.
No, he was still there. He hit a home run yesterday. Let me check roster resource for today. Yeah, but
I think he's still up. So like, they might have three catchers.
And they did that for a while. They'd have Zach Collins DH and then rotate Jansen and Kirk. But now Kirk's hitting so well. Yeah, Zach Collins is still up there.
He's got to be the. I mean, I don't see them calling up Moreno and not playing him. But
No. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. They called him up. They haven't had a game since they called him up. So Friday will be a fun telltale sign of where that one's going to go. Because like you said, you don't call up a big-time prospect to sit him. That's why Joey Bart got sent back down. It's like, you need to play every day and figure it out. You're not playing up here every day. So go.
Insert Rockies joke here. But, yes, in general, absolutely.
Valid point. Let's go to the Boston Red Sox here. Enrique Hernandez is out at least 10 days with a hip flexor injury. Anything with a hip flexor joint, anything does not make me happy, especially with a guy that you're hoping to get a little speed from. It might be minor. You never know, though. So, and he's had a disappointing season so far. Any thoughts on Enrique and the Red Sox?
Yeah, I mean, it's just rough timing. He was starting to heat up a little bit, and injury comes at the wrong time. It looks like Franchi Cordero is going to get even more playing time, for better or for worse. Franchi does have 3 homers, hitting .230, but at least going to play every day against right-handed pitching. So he would stand to gain the most from Kike going down, but only in kind of matchup heavy, right hand heavy weeks would I think about going back to old Franchi. So outside of that, I mean, it's JBJ and Verdugo kind of locked in the other two outfield slots. So a lot of Franchi and maybe some Christian Arroyo when they play face lefties. Not too excited in either one.
Yep, matchup plays pretty much. And the fact they didn't call up Jaron Duran again like they did when JBJ went down kind of makes me wonder on that whole situation as well. So that'll be interesting to follow. Alex Cobb, I think said it preseason that all these guys on the Giants are going to go on the IL at some point in time. And here's Alex Cobb's Lease's first trip, 15-day IL, retroactive to June 4th when he got scratched with a neck strain. I don't know what to think about this one because they didn't put him on right away. It's almost like they thought they could make it work. And then they realized, you know what? It's been long enough. We need to go on the IL. We need more arms in the bullpen. Go figure it out. Get fixed. We'll see. Maybe the neck's what made him the most unlucky pitcher in baseball. I don't know. But yeah, he's going to be out for another, you know, week probably.
Yeah, it was rough. We talked about Cobb during our episode on the, like, kind of the trifecta of bad luck. And he was the one. And I remember even saying, it was like, yes, he is pitching way better than the results would show, but how much time is he going to have with regression to kick in and actually have those luck factors catch up and kind of even out? And yeah, it turns out that injury bug has hit. So it sucks. I think Alex Cobb's still actually a really good pitcher. Hopefully the time off just kind of helps him reset and get his thing together. I think Jacob Junis is pretty entrenched now in the rotation. Yep. Actually pitched really well his last time out. I think had 8 strikeouts. I forget who he faced, but
it was Miami.
Was it Miami? Yep. He looks good. He's there's his slider like 60% of the time. But pitching deep enough into games, and it looks like in 12 teamers, Junis is like 72% rostered in 12 teamers. So in your 12 team and your 10 team leagues with good matchups, I think Junis is a really good fill-in. I know he was kind of in the rotation before, but he's definitely cemented right now. Do you know, I mean, you're the Giants guy, anyone in AAA no, you're shaking your head. No. So.
There's a couple guys that might get their chance here, and they're like Sammy Long might get another shot and some other guys, but nothing that's jumping out because they let Beattie go. So there's nothing that really jumps out to me unless they want to make a big splash for some of their prospects that are like in Double A that are pitching really well. I just don't think that's not what Farhan's doing right now. He's still waiting about a year or two. So I have those pieces together. If they're in contention, they might trade for a guy like or sign, you know, J.A. Happ or something. Like that's a Giants type thing. That's what they'll do. So
one thing I wish, man, and I know I'm still holding on to false hope here, is they got Matt Boyd. I know he's on the IL, but like, man.
Is it All-Star break with him, I think?
I believe he's on the 60-day, but I think it is roughly around the All-Star break where he might make it back. So yeah, I don't know. Nice. Someone who's been
– No, that's 100% a good
call.
He's
obviously been pretty good. So, he's throwing live batting practice as of last week, so.
Well, that's what he does most of the time, so it's okay. Ooh. I'm sorry, I had to. But I'd be intrigued. Let's put it that way. Steven Strasburg returned from the IL, made his first start of the season after thoracic outlet surgery, which is usually a death sentence for pitchers. But we'll see. He came in through 83 pitches. His velocity was down compared to his norms, which you kind of expect after a surgery like that. Still had a 35% CSW, which is kind of promising. Especially I saw after the first inning, he had no whiffs at all. So he got a lot better as the game went on, let's put it that way. But all of his normal numbers you want to look at, if you want to get really geeky on it with the spins and stuff, it was all down from the norm. So something to keep in mind. But again, you also expect that from thoracic outlet surgery. So you have to be almost more of a pitcher than a thrower now. So we'll see where Strauss goes from here. But what are your thoughts after seeing this first go around? I know a lot of people already added him, so he's probably not available in deeper leagues. But is he a guy that's maybe worth giving a shot?
Yeah, I mean, the shrewd pickup was to grab him a couple weeks ago. I only watched the first inning. It was kind of at the end of my work day, so I had it on and had him against Trevor Rogers. I can't keep my eyes off Trevor Rogers. I have no idea why. I'm a sucker for punishment. He actually pitched pretty well today. But Strasburg, yeah, the velocity down was not good. And what I saw, I mean, this is just the bias of what you see. I saw that first inning where he had, I think it was 21, 22 pitches without a whiff. And really at the end of it, even though the CSW, the called plus swing strike rate was 35%, he only had 6 whiffs on 83 pitches with that velocity. It's concerning to me if this is actually where the velocity rests. Like you said, this is his first game back in forever. So maybe it's just a tune up and it'll kind of be like a Zach Wheeler type of progression. I'm not saying he's going to be Zach Wheeler, but just that velocity kind of building back up, over time. So I don't know. If you speculated on Strasburg, I would obviously hold him, but probably bench him until we get either a good outing or see a bump in fastball velocity, because I don't know if he could. He used to be able to live at 97, 98, you know, earlier in his career, and blow people away. Then it went down to about 94, 95 when he was elite in 2018, 2019. He learned to pitch with a 94, 95 mile an hour fastball. Can he do it at 91, 92? That's a whole other level. A 91, 92 mile an hour fastball is a lot easier to hit than 94, 95.
It's batting practice for these guys. That's why it gets a little trickier now. So we'll see. He's always fun to watch when he's on, but it's a different Stross. So we'll have to see how it goes. Yeah. A couple more here. Jaime Candelario goes to the IL with a shoulder injury that he hurt diving for a ground ball. That's not good, especially for a guy whose power I thought would be better this year, and it has not shown up at all. And now you throw a shoulder injury into the mix. Yep. He was probably already dropped in many leagues because the production was so bad. He's 100% a drop for me now. I see Harold Castro is penciled in to play third base. That does nothing for me. So what's your thoughts on this situation?
Yeah, don't slander my AL tout reserve. Hey,
in your Harold deeper Castro. Leagues like that, then yes, he's got a pulse. Like,
in your 16-team AL only. He doesn't do much for. I always get him obviously confused with Willie Castro, who's obviously a lot more fantasy relevant leading off and that sort of thing. But yeah, it looks like it's going to be Harold Castro for the foreseeable future. I mean, hitting 281, four homers and 119 plate appearances, like that's not that bad. Barrel rate's almost 10%. So I'm going to put him in tout wars in a 15 teamer, probably passing on Harold Castro, even in like a corner infield situation. So not too much. Disappointing to see Jaime Candelario. A lot of really smart people on him this season, and like you mentioned, Bubba, shoulders just scare the crap out of me. What will that power look like when he gets back?
Yeah, I was one of those that wrote articles telling you to save your draft capital and pick up Jaime Candelario this year. Like I believed all the doubles we saw. I was like, okay, it's the next step. He's gonna, and it's been dreadful. So maybe he's a buy low next year, but that's a whole other conversation for another time. We'll see how that one plays out. Last piece of news here for now, Bailey Ober to the IL with a groin injury. This was a tough one because some people either really love him or you just don't want anything to do with Bailey Ober, but he's very streamable. Let's put it that way. Very streamable at times. What's your thoughts on Ober? Because this Twins rotation, it's been, I think, better than people expected, but it's still kind of got some questions. Then they were like the best team in the Central right now, which is pretty crazy. We got Bundy, Smeltzer, Cole Sands, and Chris Archer. They don't even have a fifth starter listed right now. So it's ugly.
I mean, this is like rinse repeat. Every episode we talk
this is like Plunkenton stuff.
It is. Who I did watch today and does exist. And I unfortunately almost wish he didn't after today. That was brutal. But yeah, another podcast, another twin starter injury. I mean, it's Ober, it was Paddock, it was Sonny Gray before that. Like, I don't know how they're doing it. Chris Archer's now going five innings at least and gets a two-step next week. First one's at Seattle. So maybe that's, I don't know. Maybe that's a thing in super deep leagues, but this rotation's in shambles, man. Even like Devin Smeltzer, I know he has been great on the surface, and I actually tweeted this out before he even survived Toronto this week. But like at some point, we're getting the Devin Smeltzer give back game, a 193 ERA, 464 xFIP. Like I don't know how long the Twins are going to stay in contention with this rotation. It's at some point it's going to start wearing out their bullpen and kind of go in shambles unless they get some guys back here soon. I know Sonny Gray is kind of on the rebound, but it's ugly in Minnesota for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be trouble quick because you'd imagine the White Sox will get going eventually once they get healthy. Like they're too good not to be good type thing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then these other teams, yeah, maybe not. So it's a bad division. At least I think I saw a tweet that someone said ban all divisions because the Twins would be the fourth best team in the AL East. And That tells you everything you need to know right there about the AL Central.
Yeah. I'm still tilting from, so this is the trials and tribulations of having two steps. I picked up Dylan Bundy for his two step last week because he had at Detroit the first time, the first step, and then at Toronto. Did not get the Detroit win, so I knew Toronto was not going to go well, and yep. Spoiler alert.
Well, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop on so many Tuesday. Like, Walker, the complete game shutout this week against Anaheim. I'm waiting for that to screw up. Stripling was serviceable. We'll talk about him in a minute. There was a handful that, like,
Pilkington, weather delay, so he only had one.
Edward Cabrera wasn't bad, but now he's got a little trickier start over the weekend. Like, so there's some fun ones to see how that all plays out. And that'll take us to a new segment that I think we're going to try to develop as the weeks go on here. It's talking weekend matchups, talking about some of the best and worst schedules of the week and some hitters and pitchers to potentially target. We're going to play a game. Would you like to elaborate a little bit on what we are going to discuss in this segment that I think is going to be very beneficial for people that listen on Fridays before they set their lineups?
Yeah, sure. So we record these every kind of late Thursday night, Pacific time. So it drops first thing Friday. You got all day Friday to kind of listen. I think that's probably when most people pick up the pod on Friday morning and tune in. So throughout Friday, you're kind of looking at your lineups for the weekend, especially if you're in NFBC leagues, you can change out all your hitters for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then obviously daily leagues, like, you're looking at the series ahead. So let us know what you think of this. I mean, I thought it'd be fun to kind of just look through the Friday through Sunday schedules, just at a high level, like a team level, a hitter level, which teams play the most. I mean, we'll see a couple teams actually play four games this weekend, which have the hardest matchup. So if you've got a guy who's very, very fringe as a tiebreaker, you definitely want to look at matchups and see which pitchers they're facing, lefty, righty, and quality of, opponent. So I figured it'd be kind of cool just to kind of go through the Friday Sunday schedule, at least just like the outliers, the ones that are really easy schedules, the ones that are really tough schedules, and then to kind of make it a little interactive, we're each gonna pick one streamer for the weekend. And streamer we're loosely defining as, or actually tightly defining, but arbitrarily I would say defining, guys who are less than 50% rostered in 12 team NFBC leagues. So if you're in kind of a casual league, a daily league, these are guys who I think might be available on your wires, and you can root along with us for our pick. So we're going to pick a hitter and a pitcher each. Pitcher, we're going to look at the number of strikeouts. Hitters, we're going to look at the counting stats, hits, runs, and RBI. And I'm tracking this thing, man. I've got a little sheet here. We're going to put our picks in every week, and I don't know, we'll figure something out for what's on the line here, but yeah, that's the general gist.
Yeah, something in FPAS. It'll be fun. Yep. We won't go over every setup here, but one easy way to kind of see, you know, some of the better matchups potentially is if you go to Baseball HQ and their weekly probable batters. And like you said, the Friday through Sunday deal up here, and it stands out real quickly on who the better hitting matchups are. And then I look at the RotoWire thing and it tells me, okay, these are the matchups who they're facing. And it makes more sense. You got the right righty lefties and you know exactly who they are. And those scenarios, there's much more on the Baseball HQ to break down for righties and lefties and stuff to dig in on all that good stuff. But the number one schedule this weekend, and to shock to not many, is the New York Yankees who face the Chicago Cubs. And the Yankees are hitting everybody right now. Now they're at home, and you get Wade Miley, Swarmer, can't even pretend I know what his first name is, and Marcus Stroman, who has been really bad. So this is like the recipe for complete success for your Yankees. And before I give you the floor, I did not pick this guy as my hitter, and I almost did, and then I saw he went deep tonight. I'm just going to say it because I was all over him this year and I've dropped him everywhere. Aaron Hicks is heating up, folks, and this is the perfect weekend to play Aaron Hicks if he's available out there for you. I'm just throwing that out there right now. I did not pick him. He was my second choice this week, and he went deep again on Thursday night. So I just have a weird feeling that he's getting going now. So any thoughts on the Yankees?
That's funny. That is funny you mentioned him. I'm glad you mentioned him because it's easy to say, like, oh, Yankees, easy schedule. Most of your Yankees are already rostered. Aaron Hicks is probably not because he's been absolutely terrible. I actually have Aaron Hicks on my main event team still. He's on my bench, but I have already learned something from this segment because I didn't know he went deep tonight. So I'm, I am very likely to put in Aaron Hicks this weekend. Those matchups are sweet, man.
Juicy. Juicy matchups. One easy one that you don't even need a chart to figure out is because it's logistics. Coors Field is in play this weekend. Actually, they're in San Diego.
Nope. They're at San Diego.
But
they've got a really four games. So they've got – it's four games, but they've got a – it's tough. They're at San Diego, and it's Musgrove on Friday. It's Clevenger, it's Mackenzie Gore on Saturday. They've got the doubleheader. And then Nick Martinez, who has been great in certain stretches on Sunday. So, like, Road Rockies, a lot of times you're not starting the fringe Road Rockies. Like, I always think of, like, Jose Iglesias as the kind of the prime example of someone you want to start on Coors Weeks and bench on the road. But, like, even your better Rockies, that's a pretty brutal weekend slate, even though it is four games. My favorite slate, actually, even though they don't have the easiest rating according to HQ's tool here, is San Diego, though, just because on the flip side, they face Colorado pitching and they get that fourth game. And so actually my hitter pick this week, well, I mean, we'll, I guess, get to him later, but I'll spoil it, is Ha-Seong Kim, for that reason, playing every day at shortstop and get the four games. Colorado's throwing out Chad Kuhl, who's actually been pretty good, but then Kyle Freeland, Herman Marquez, and Ryan Feltner, who actually started out okay but got lit up his last time out. So, like, that's a matchup. If there are any Padres with that fourth game available against that Rockies staff, like, that's something I'm definitely looking at for this week.
There's a couple ratings I was kind of surprised by, but computers are a lot smarter than I am. Houston at Miami, or against Miami, has a very solid rating, and so does Cincinnati at St. Louis. Being in that ballpark surprised me a bit, because definitely a pitcher's ballpark. And Cincy will be facing, I don't know who Palante is, but then Wainwright and Dakota Hudson's hittable. So that's not the worst matchup, but the ballpark surprised me a bit. And then with the Houston situation, they get Pablo Lopez, Garrett, and Edward Cabrera. So that could be like a total boomer bust situation there for Houston. So any thoughts on those two matchups?
Yeah, and actually one thing, it's good you mentioned, like, so to go back to Houston, these ratings are basically, so at HQ we do, and Bubba, you write the Friday Daily Matchups thing, where we've got an algorithm that is, you know, tested and validated. I mean, it's got a pretty good track record. It's all starting pitcher based. And so typically what we're doing with this tool is we're kind of flipping that around and saying, okay, what are the ratings for the pitchers against these teams this weekend? And so what you'll find sometimes is, like, your elite hitting teams, like your Houston, they always get a pretty good rating because they are Houston and they hit well. So the pitchers against them aren't rated as high, if that makes sense. So typically, like, your Yankees, your Houston, even though Yankees are, like, legitimately a really easy schedule this weekend, there is some of that. And on the flip side too, where, like, your really bad lineups, they're kind of always a little bit lower than what the strict matchup might be. So
makes just a lot of sense.
A little disclaimer there if that does make sense. Yeah.
One of the better matchups of the week, and this one stands out to me big time, is Philadelphia at home. Always a good ballpark to hit in. Yeah. Against the struggling D-backs. You got Zach Gallen, who's been kind of scuffling of late. Mad Bum's a disaster. And then you have Luke Weaver, who I've never been a fan of. He's just a pitch-to-contact guy these days for me. So I think if you can get your Phillies in, that would be a captain obvious thing to do. And maybe an Odubel Herrera is out there. I don't know who would actually be out there for Philadelphia. Maybe Bryson Stock could be out there. We'll talk about him in a minute. That's my pick for the week. So there's a few options there in Philly.
Yep. On the flip side, there are some really brutal matchups. So, like, the Cubs are one of the worst ones, because, I mean, we just talked about the Yankees, but the Cubs are facing the Yankees, who we talk a lot about the Yankees hitting, but the Yankees pitching has just been ridiculous this year. Mm-hmm. Miami has a brutal schedule. They are at Houston, which we kind of just talked about. They get Luis Garcia on Friday. So they skip Verlander, but they get Luis Garcia, Framber Valdez, and Christian Javier. Like, that's a really tough, a tough weekend. And then Pittsburgh, another one. Again, kind of like I was mentioning, a little bit because it's Pittsburgh, but they still face on Friday Spencer Strider, Charlie Morton on Saturday, and then Kyle Wright Sunday. So, like, if you've got any fringe guys on Pittsburgh, on Miami, on the Cubs, and like I mentioned, Colorado, like, those are guys you want to avoid. And I know, like, batters on those teams are probably available on your waiver wire for this weekend. And if you're in a daily league, like, you probably want to, you want to fade those guys and not pick those guys up this weekend. It's just some pretty brutal matchups there.
For sure. So that's just a little glimpse on things. If you guys have more questions, we can, like, do deeper dives or do something different. Let us know what you guys are looking for. But that's just kind of the basics. And you can like there's a lot of, obviously didn't even probably mention maybe half the teams. So there's a lot of things you can dig into, check out and get you ready, because it might sound silly to many, but either in daily leagues or if you're in NFPC bi-weekly leagues, it's like Aaron Hicks, all of a sudden, I have him in a ton of DCs. He will probably be in lineups that he has not been in a long time. Just won't be. But it's just little things like that that make decisions a little easier when you can break it down, matchup dependent.
Yep. Hicks is Hicks is 21% rostered in NFPC 12 teams. So he's pretty much widely available.
Yep. Go get him, folks. Have some fun. Be ready to be disappointed with me, because I'm going to be with you. Don't you worry. Like, I love Aaron.
You didn't pick him though, so you're
hedging a little bit. He's my runner up, and I'll explain why in a minute here. So let's talk about our picks, which I just got rid of here. So your hitter pick of the week, you mentioned already. Why don't you break down why you like Mr. Kim?
Mostly just everyday playing time. So he's been at shorts. I think he got the night off on Wednesday or Thursday this week, but that's, I think Kim played 8 games in a row before that. So love the stable playing time, love the matchup against Colorado pitching, and then also love that fourth game. He may not play all four, and maybe he doesn't play both of the double header, but maybe he does play all four, a pinch hit in that fourth game. And the skills for Kim have been pretty good. I mean, he's hitting .207, which isn't all that great, but 4 homers, 3 steals. That lineup's great, so he's getting those runs RBI. I just think he's making enough contact that against that pitching that I think he's going to rack up some counting stats this weekend. I think he's going to outperform your boy.
Yeah, he could, and you got the four. You got the extra game advantage. You might actually have 2 game advantage, because I took Bryson Stott.
Yep.
And one reason why I almost took Hicks is Hicks is a switch hitter, so he's got no platoon issues. Where Stott could potentially sit versus Madbum, that's an option. We'll see how that plays out. But I wanted to roll with Stott for a couple reasons. He's obviously heating up. 4 hits in his last game. He's hit safely in 5 of his last 7. He's only striking out 18% of the time. I say only because that's actually a massive improvement for Bryson Stott over the last week. Since basically his last call-up, we've seen a different guy hitting .385, 3 home runs. Even stole a bag, but we're doing a counting stats game. And over those last 7 games, he has 3 homers, 10 runs scored, and 8 RBIs. That is a nice counting stat. Where Hicks was more of a run scored and not much else at the point in time. That can obviously change with the Yankees and the matchups they have this weekend. But I like what Bryson Stott's doing. They want this guy to succeed. They've brought him back and forth a few times. And now he's actually hitting, and the Phillies are hitting. They went off in Milwaukee this week. Mm-hmm. That offense is so dynamic. It's almost like a domino effect. Once one guy starts hitting, they're all going to start just raking. It feels like that's what they're doing right now. So I'm going with Bryson Stott, because he's going to get to start against Zach Gallen, who, like I mentioned, struggling. Maybe still gets to face Madbum because he's just that bad. But Luke Weaver is very gettable, very gettable. So I will take some Bryson Stott on this one, just for the upside of the counting stats over Aaron Hicks. That was my separation point. But he might only play 2 games, so this could be very interesting.
Thing is, like, yeah, like, I just think from a developmental standpoint, like, if you want to see what you have with Bryson Stott against lefties, like, you kind of got to play him against Bumgarner.
Especially against Madbum. He's not like he's going to overpower you.
Exactly. So we'll see. But yeah, we'll see.
Who is your pitcher this week? Because it's funny, he's going to face your hitter.
Yeah, so I felt so
there weren't many options. I'll preface that real quick to people.
I will preface as well. I was going through the under 50%, and I saw your pick. I took the first hitter pick, so I gave you the floor for. I gave you the wheel, so you took the second hitter and the first pitcher. Your pick was someone who I was definitely looking at, but yeah, under 50%. Rostered in 12 teamers on the pitching side was really brutal. There were, I mean, you mentioned earlier Dakota Hudson. I was looking at like Keegan Thompson, but those guys just do not strike anybody out. So I went with Ramon Marquez. I know it's a little bit of a two-face here because they are playing San Diego, and I went with Kim on that side. But I just think even though the swing strike rate is down, Ramon Marquez is not the pitcher he used to be. I kind of feel like he's the lesser of two evils, or multiple evils, I guess, and a lot of evils in this case with the pitching pool. So I just think he's got the most strikeout upside of anyone lightly owned. Doesn't mean like I'd still be really, really, really not starting him in an actual fantasy league against San Diego. San Diego is just too good. And they're at home. But I think Marquez at least racks up a few Ks, had 7 strikeouts his last time at San Francisco. So at least the potential's there.
I actually like your pick once I saw it, because I did my picks. I went out to do some stuff and I loaded the page up before we recorded. I'm like, for the games theory of this, that's a smart pick because he strikes guys out. He might get shelled, but he could probably get you 5 Ks. Where my pick, Ross Stripling, who I think is the better pitcher with the better matchup, he might not go deep enough. He was super efficient to go 5 innings last time, but he only had 2 strikeouts. Like, if he gets 5 Ks, he might only go 3 innings, but we'll see. 5 Ks is still pretty nice. He's facing the Tigers. He strike out 25% of the time on the season versus right-handed pitching, so that's a plus. But Stripling is not the most overpowering strikeout guy. So you might actually have the upper hand on this one. My guy might, if we did earn dollars for a game or something, Stripling would probably be the guy. But Marquez might win this in the strikeout department. So that's a pretty, like you said, I wouldn't start Marquez this weekend. I'd start Stripling. But for our purpose, I think you got the better option, I'll be honest.
The thing with Stripling, and maybe, I don't know, maybe we do something like DraftKings points or something instead of just strikeouts. But for this week, we'll just roll with it. Again, this is fluid. Trying things on the fly and seeing what works and what doesn't. So again, let us know. The thing with Stripling, I actually picked up Stripling in a bunch of spots this week because he had the two-step. I did not think he would pitch long enough. That was my reservation with Stripling, was he had only thrown 40 pitches. He's going into the rotation from the bullpen through 40 pitches and 38 pitches in his last two relief outings. Bumped that up to 56 pitches and actually went 5 innings at Kansas City, got the win. So yeah, I just worry about like the total batter's face for Stripling this weekend. He might go like 60, 70 pitches. So we'll see. That thing I will say, and I think I mentioned this last time, but a little bit of a pitch mix change with that changeup. Change was pretty good, and he faded his fastball, getting ground balls, which isn't going to help your strikeouts, but at least missing a few more bats and should be stretched out a little bit more for this one. So we'll see.
And the one other thing I'll say with Stripling, and it has nothing to do with this weekend, but you mentioned you picked him up. I picked him up as well. And if people don't listen to my other show on Tuesdays where we recap Fab stuff, I mentioned that he was one of the guys I targeted more than some other two-step guys because Stripling's actually going to stay in the rotation, and he's actually going to be serviceable going forward on a very good team.
On a good team. Yep.
We're like Pilkington or some of the guys, like, it's literally play a 1 week thing and you're going to bounce. So that's just like, I wanted to rehash it here real quick, is I'm with you. I was concerned. Okay. He might not go deep enough. It is what it is, but this was more of a long game with Stripling than it was with some other potential 2 start streamers. So if he's out there for you guys, he's probably actually going to still be serviceable going forward, except like when he plays the Yankees or something. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, Pilkington. Pilkington might be toast, man. He goes to Colorado next week, so might
see you, buddy. See you.
I know he didn't deliver on which. By the way, happy birthday! I should have mentioned this at the beginning. Happy birthday to Toby.
Yep.
Your excellent co-host on the early week show. He was asking for his birthday present. He asked it was like 10 different pitchers, but one of them was Pilkington, who was like Cease, one of the only ones who did not
Cole
deliver.
Like, it was not good. He had a rough one.
He did have Cole.
Yeah, so it's a good thing he's enjoying tons of desserts, because that's what Toby does. So
yeah. Toby, do not. He's probably checking his team.
He'll be chocolate wasted right now, so he'll be okay.
Happy birthday, man.
Yes, happy birthday, Toby. 40 years old. 40 years old.
I forgot how old I was last time, but.
Yeah, I always forget. I only saw it because his wife took over his Twitter account and tweeted out that he's 40, so I laughed. Let's talk Bloom Boards. This is what everybody really comes here for. The Bloom Boards are awesome, and you did this last year, and I loved it. Like, the mulligan, like, if you took the guy's one bad start, like, Giolito had that horrific Boston Marathon start. Like, what do we look like? And it really brings into perspective how, like, just one bad outing can change everything, and a pitcher can still be pretty good, and you just got to kind of eat it, I guess. And so you did it again with this one 2 months into the season. Let's take a mulligan on some guys, like the one bad start, and then what the mulligan ERA is. And it's pretty awesome. So before we go into names, if you want to elaborate on my kind of synopsis of what the Bloom Board is.
No, man, you nailed it. I mean, I typically run this, and I read an article with my own thoughts on a bunch of these guys for HQ, and that came out this past Wednesday. But yeah, I feel like around the 2 month point, and this actually started, the first time I ever did this was after the 2020 season, which obviously was 2 months. It's just a good, like, most of these guys have around 10 starts right now. And so it's just a decent, like, point, a decent milestone to to look at. Like, you've got enough of a sample, but it's also a small enough sample where one bad start really does like throw off your numbers. And so like the obvious retort to this is like, yeah, you can't just throw out their bad outing. It happened. For a lot of these guys, they were in your active lineup when it happened. And sure, absolutely. But these guys are humans. And some of these guys, like when some of the guys we'll dig into a little bit, like there's context and reasons for some of these bad starts. And it's just interesting to see, like we just look at ERA and just one start can change everything. And really, like depending on when that bad start happens, can really like overweigh stats throughout the season. And guys are pitching a lot better than you would really think just because of one bad start. So that's the general synopsis. I think I should, like, maybe next year. It's a lot harder from like a data standpoint, but I probably should take their best start out as well. Take their worst, you know, figure skating style or whatever. Take their best, take their worst, and then see who improves the most just to make it a little bit more fair. But whatever. It's interesting to talk about.
For sure, for sure. And we'll start with one of everyone's darling. It was the cover boy of your speculator article. Tyler Miguel, 4.41 ERA on the season. But that last start before he went on the IL, only one inning, 8 earned runs. If you take that little stint out, he has a 2.43 ERA. I think we all know how good Tyler is, Siler, as he was named at one point in time. And he's supposed to return in the next few days, potentially. So we might get to see him again. But what do you have on him if you dug in some more or not? But it was basically the injury start that did it for him.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, and that's where I mentioned like context. Like, it turns out he was, I don't know if he was pitching hurt or if he hurt himself during that start or whatever. He went to the IL with biceps and has not been back. I think he's actually coming back this weekend. I put him in my lineup.
He's supposed to come back this weekend. Yes.
Yeah, I did put him in, so he probably won't be. I'll probably get pushed till Monday, but Tyler Miguel, 4.41 ERA. And before that last start, again, you could argue he was hurt or whatever. He had a 2.43 ERA. So like, that's a 2-run difference. And if you're just staring at Tyler Miguel in shallow league saying 4.41 ERA, I think he's a heck of a lot better than that. And I think a lot of, I mean, that start is going to hurt all year, even if he pitches well the rest of the season. Like, that just leaves a mark to give up 8 earned runs in under 2 innings. But yeah, he was the guy who came all the way to the top. He's the one out of any pitcher in baseball. If you take one start away, he had the biggest difference in ERA. And a lot of that's because he's, I think, he only had 5 or 6 starts. But yeah, that's leaving a brutal mark right now.
I want to mention Tanner Houck, 3.54 ERA. Yeah, on May 5th, only went 2 innings, allowed 7 runs. You take that out, he's got a 2.11 ERA. What I wanted to mention with Tanner Houck is we know how good he is, but he's also pitching out of the bullpen. And he's going into that Garrett Whitlock role. So he's going to be like either opener, behind an opener. He's going to have actually a pretty fantasy-relevant role is why I wanted to bring up Tanner Houck for a second. And you take out that big blow-up. He could be a ratio darling going down the stretch here with some strikeout appeal. So what's your thoughts on this Tanner Houck situation?
Yeah, like the last few, and actually shout out Greg Jewett, Reliever Recon folks. They sent something out about Houck. I think last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, even at this time, they were ahead of the game on Houck as a high leverage reliever because, I mean, Boston needs it. But last 3 appearances for Tanner Houck out of the pen, 6 strikeouts, 1 walk in 5 innings. Like, he's pitching multiple innings. That is something where like he's gonna get wins that way, especially on a Boston team that's competitive. I don't know if he's gonna be the full-time closer. I don't think that's how they're gonna use him. I think, like you said, Bob, it's gonna be more of a Whitlock thing, like a fireman, but 2-3 innings at a time in relief, that has a ton of value. And he's got like, I mean, the fastball slider, it's really the slider, which for Houck when he was a starter this season, wasn't that great, but if he can lean into that thing full time and kind of go all out for 2-3 inning stints, he's got the stuff to make this work. So yeah, really interesting, really interesting guy. And yeah, you take that 7 earned run outing out from May 5th and that 3.54 ERA drops to 2.11. So pretty much every other start or every other appearance has been really good.
Been very, very good. So he's definitely a guy to look at. And especially your deeper leagues, but I even do it in 12-team leagues. Like, if you can't find someone to stream, Hauk is a phenomenal guy to put in for the week. Like, he can really help you out in a lot of ways. So it's just something to keep in mind as the season gets, as the ball keeps flying the way it is these days, as things have changed over the last couple weeks to a month of baseball. Christian Javier is a fun one because I love the talent of Christian Javier. I know I'm not alone in that ilk. But 3.22 ERA, people would be pretty pumped on that. But on May 14th, 4 innings pitched, 7 earned. And if you really want to go deeper, his last outing, 3 2/3 innings, 5 earned runs. But that one's still on the ledge here. But you take out that 7 earned run outing, and he has a 1.98 ERA. He gets strikeouts. He's been filthy. Christian Javier has been pretty darn good, Ryan.
Yeah, and yeah, so that my criteria for even making this list was a bad start was anything 6 earned runs or more, and you could only have one of those. Like, yeah. Can't start going, you know. Yeah, if you take out his 3 worst, blah blah blah. But Javier, like, so Christian Javier had that 7 earned run start, the 5 earned run start, like you mentioned. Every other appearance has been 2 earned runs or fewer. And he's only had 2 earned runs once. So everything outside of that has been 1 earned run or fewer. So really good stuff, despite a bad outing. Houston knows what they're doing with pitchers. It's 12.7% swinging strike rate. The skills are there. I worry a little bit about the control and the fly ball rate. It's going to make him susceptible to homers. It won't hurt his whip that much, but if the ball starts flying this summer, that's something to watch out for. But I mean, he's proven on it in an organization that knows what they're doing with pitching that he'll be just fine despite the 2 rough outings, we'll say.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a big fan. If they could teach Jose Urquidy how to do that, that'd be pretty darn awesome, but he's just been a mess. The Cubbies have 2 on the list, Justin Steele. But the one I wanted to focus more on is Keegan Thompson, which stood out in a big way right here. And on the season, a 3.17 ERA, and he started the season in the pen. He's been stretched out. He's, I think, five or six of his last six or seven outings have been starts. On June 7th, his last outing, 3 innings, 7 earned. But if you take that one out, a 1.99 ERA. He's been incredibly efficient. Strikeouts haven't been over the moon. 3-4 strikeouts, more starts. So it's not like he's lighting the world on fire there, but pretty productive stuff there from Keegan Thompson. I know you said you didn't want to pick him in the game this week, not a big strikeout guy, but what's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I passed on. I'm kind of lukewarm. He gets ground balls. Like, the ground ball rate has been really good, but just not missing enough bats. Like, anytime I see a single digit swinging strike rate for somebody who isn't really stretched out. I mean, I guess he threw 89 pitches against St. Louis, but I think he's pitching over his head despite the bad outing. So he's actually one guy who, like, and again, with these boards, I always say they're the start of your dive, not just this is a list of everyone I like. So I don't see it with Thompson. I want to see more whiffs before I get in. And since the surface stats are so good, I'm not getting in.
Yep, we share a lot of similarities. I like strikeouts. I need strikeouts. So if the blowup happens, at least I get something out of this.
You get something.
Yep. Corey Kluber is another guy, not a lot of strikeouts, but been crazy efficient. 3.88 ERA on the season. On May 10th, gave up 8 runs in 3 innings. Otherwise, I'd have a 2.73 ERA. And if you look at his recent production, man, it's more often than not 5-plus innings when he goes out there. He's getting you 4 or 5 Ks most starts, sometimes a little more. He's been really good. Not Cy Young Corey Kluber, but pretty darn efficient, like better than I gave him credit for. What's your thoughts when you look at Corey Kluber?
Yeah, and he's one where, like, I bet pretty much everyone wrote off Corey Kluber after that 8 earned run outing, right? Yep. It was at the Angels. The Angels were actually a good team way back when, if you can recall being old enough when the Angels were good. but that since that 8 earned run outing, yeah, 2 earned runs against Detroit, okay, whatever. 2 earned runs at Baltimore, okay. But then 1 earned run against the Yankees, 1 earned run at Texas, and 3 earned against St. Louis. So, like, it hasn't just been like totally easy matchups the entire time. He's actually been doing pretty good against good lineups. And again, perception, like that's the big thing I want to kind of drive home with this board is, like, you see that ERA spike after the 8 earned run outing. I don't think many people know how good Corey Kluber has been over the last month. So that's the kind of stuff where you get that one bad outing and it makes everything look bad, but he's actually been a lot better than you think lately.
Yeah, a lot better than I would have given him credit for. Pretty impressive from the guy. I thought he was pretty much a done deal, or at worst would have been kind of like Walker last year, where they go four, maybe five innings. Like, I never thought he'd actually have a full-time thing, which is pretty darn impressive right now.
Yeah, and we'll see. Like, he is 36. True. Like, we'll see how deep he goes into the season. But, I mean, for now, ride him. And again, I appeal to authority. Like, Tampa, if Tampa thinks he's good enough to kind of stick around and do what he's doing, then I'm okay with him too.
I'm with you on that one. Hunter Green, 5.40 ERA on the season on May 5th. Eight earned in three innings would have lowered him to 4.3 ERA. It's been an up and down season for Hunter Green, to say the least. One thing he does do well, though, is strike a lot of people out. Mm-hmm. But he's a tough one. Like, I even heard Jeff Erickson and Mr. Red talk about him being a streamer for right now. Like, it's tough to play him consistently. When you look at Hunter Green, how do you approach this? Because he gets a ton of strikeouts, which is very, very valuable. But his ratios are not kind at all.
Yeah, and I saw somewhere, I want to give proper attribution, but I saw somewhere it was a list of like the worst fastballs.
Eric Cross put out the best and worst. Yeah.
So Cross put, yep, that's right. Eric Cross put it out there. Yeah. So I think it was Patrick Sandoval with like one of the worst ones, which
by far, yeah.
Which was surprising, but super surprising to me was Hunter Green was on that list.
That was the first name I saw too. I was like, exactly. What?
Yeah, like all, I mean, it's velocity is not everything. Movement, how much you rely on it, that sort of thing. So I just thought that was interesting. That said, like, Hunter Green, his last two starts at Boston against Arizona, 16 Ks, no walks. It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. If we take that out a little bit further, his last four starts, that there's an at Toronto in there, that's against the Cubs. It is 28-4 strikeout to walk. So someone who's been a little bit better lately since that really pretty much disaster at Milwaukee with the eight earned. And actually that eight earned came right after four earned runs and four innings at Coors Field. So Hunter Green went through that rough patch there in early mid-May and has been, again, similar to Kluber. Definitely different style, but a lot better over his last four starts here. So we'll
see. And six or more strikeouts in 10 of 11 starts. Like he's at least giving you something to write home about. Like, as bad as his walk rate is, he still nearly has a 20% K to walk. Like that's pretty wild stuff.
I definitely do want to like, number. Yeah. I definitely do want to, like, Eric's tweet really that was so surprised. I definitely want to dig into Hunter Green a little more, like, pitch level wise, but I will not fumble around and do that.
I apologize immediately, but HQ has that great writer that writes about pitchers.
Tanner Smith.
That might be one to put a birdie in his ear on.
Yeah, that's a good call. Just actually,
throwing that out there because he does great work.
He does amazing.
Yes. Does great work on that stuff. It's way above my freaking level. So if I can read it, a lot better than me trying to figure it out. So the way he does it, like, that'd be a good one for him dig in on. Just throwing it out there. This is stuff we used to talk about off the air, people. But it just dawned on me right now. Like, that's a good one.
Tanner does excellent at TannerBall26 on Twitter, guys. Great follow.
Check that one out. Any other guys that you really want, like? Glenn Otto might surprise some that aren't in the know. Like, he's been, we've streamed him, so we know. Brady Singer, like, there's a few.
I've never been more relieved in my life than to get through the Glenn Otto two-step last week. Yep. He got two wins out of the deal. He beat Tampa. He beat Seattle. But that Seattle start, five walks, went five innings, had eight whiffs. Like, the stuff is just not there. So, like, yes, he does have the one blow up against. It was against Boston, eight earned runs. He's given up two earned runs or fewer in his other seven starts. I think that's coming crashing back to earth, at least from what, like I said, I actually cut Glenn Otto after I thanked him for his service and then dropped him after that two step, just because from what I saw, it was pretty ugly. One other name who's on here, and I kind of made a point of this in the article, is Zach Wheeler. I mean, we all know Zach Wheeler is really good. Whoever has Zach Wheeler right now, like, you're not trading for, like, you're, I mean, you're just riding with him. It's just this example where, like, Wheeler gave up 7 earned in the second start of the season. And so he's somebody who his year-to-date ERA has looked really bad for a little while, up until like a start or two ago. And so this was just kind of the point of like when that bad start happens affects your perception of a player. I can imagine there were some tweets, some takes out there after the second, third start of the season that Zach Wheeler was cooked, the shoulder problems, that sort of thing. And maybe I was one of them. I don't know, because shoulder problems do scare me. But like Zach Wheeler, 9.35 ERA after his second start of the season. Here's his year-to-date ERA after each start. So 9.35, down to 8.50, down to 5.78, down to 4.09, 4.26 after his sixth start, but then 3.49, 3.37, 3.15, 3.14. So he's sitting at a 3.14 ERA, and after every start up until now, it's been a lot higher than that. Jeez, so awesome. It's just kind of interesting to like make an example of Wheeler and just show like as someone goes through the season, as they kind of recover from that bad start, what their ERA kind of looks like. But yeah, on the whole, Wheeler 3.14 ERA would be 2.15 ERA without that second start of the season looped in there when he was ramping up.
He's been filthy. He's been darn filthy.
I'll take an L on him. Draft season, I was off.
Full fade with that shoulder. But everybody remember, check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. He has the whole Bloom board there, and you can check it out. There's some great names on there. Aaron Ashby has been a beast. Carlos Cookie Carrasco, Rodon, Merrill Kelly, some injured Brewers, and many more. So,
which Brewers aren't injured at this point on the pitching side?
Yeah, no doubt about that. So it's a good stuff, that's for sure. Let's take a couple listener questions here, and then we will. Oh, I lost him. Ryan left. He hit his button and left. I've done that before. I've done that many times. He'll be back shortly, I promise, once he realizes what he did. Yep. Hey, been there, done that. Don't you worry.
Rookie move. I know it's episode 10, but
I've done that before. But he's back. I told him it wouldn't be long. He'll figure it out real quickly. We got three listener questions to get us through here. Ken White, he asks, can you please discuss how much Fluffy Pilkington sucks? He has gotten rocked tonight. he is who he thought we were, and we let him off the hook.
I believe this may have been sent mid-game, so maybe some frustration coming out. Pilkington, honestly, he did not look that great. And the start before this was the 8 strikeout, 0 walk. Like, outlier. Looked really good. I don't know. Pilkington, I'm glad he's a real person. I'm glad I got to see him. I don't know if he'll be on my team next week. It's going to hurt because I got him on a lot of teams and maybe like $30-$35 in Fab. I don't know what you spent for him, but it kind of hurts.
I don't have him anywhere.
Oh, you don't have him?
I didn't put bids in on him.
Yeah, man.
I wanted to know, unless he puts a monocle like the Monopoly man in his eye, because that's what he sounds like. He's from that era. I had nothing to do with him.
So just Scott Jenstedt had the ultimate comp for Connor Pilkington, calling him a Judge Smell's caddy.
Oh yeah, that was great. It was so good. So good. It was perfect.
I was dying at that one. I don't know. He got screwed. Like Cleveland had their Monday game got rained out, and then they went with Quantrill on Tuesday. Wednesday they went with some dude I have never heard of instead of Pilkington. So I was suspicious again that Pilkington did not exist, and then he went today. And like I said, at Colorado next week, it's I don't know. Maybe I'll hold him, but if there's nothing on the wire this weekend, we'll see. But he's very high on my drop list. So, I get you.
Matthew Vandenbrand says, 5x5 player analysis question. During your offseason research, you can use only 5 stats for evaluating pitchers and hitters each. Which are your preferences, i.e. pitchers, K to walk, K percentage, swinging strike, home run, fly ball, Sierra, etc. Feel free to drop some HQ metrics if you feel like it.
So honestly, my honest answer is 5 is probably too much. I think at least for pitchers, we'll talk about hitters, I guess, in a sec. But I try to keep things simple on the pitching side, like strikeout minus walk. We did a board of that last week. Like that's the number one.
That's the one. Yeah.
If you want to add an ERA estimator next to that, I would recommend that. Baseball HQ uses their own version of XERA, which is similar to XFIP in that it assumes largely that batted ball quality is outside of a pitcher's control. So we normalize the home run rates like we do with XFIP. So those are the two big ones. I would use strikeout minus walk. I would use XERA. And then a third one that I would use, it's not really a metric, but it's something that I just kind of whipped up. It's called, I just call it change score. It's basically quantifying how much a pitcher changed their pitch mix from year to year. And so like a high change score means that they change their pitch mix a lot. And the skills that, because we talk about regression all the time, and regression is the greatest force in our game, but I think pitchers can reinvent themselves by changes in pitch mix, by changes in velocity, and by quantifying that, by quantifying change score and velocity, you can put more weight into a recent performance, in my opinion. If their skills surged because their velocity was up or they found a new pitch, faded a bad pitch, I'm much more willing to kind of think what they did last year will stick. So those are my big three. I would say strikeout minus walk and ERA estimator and some kind of way to evaluate pitch mix changes to see which one you should weight the most.
That's impressive that you made the change metric, because it makes a ton of sense. It's one thing that we talk about a lot in spring training is there a pitch mix change? Is there mm-hmm. increased velocity? Those are the kind of things you can pick up on and realize that, okay, maybe this guy stunk last year. Like you said, he reinvented himself. There's a difference we talk about hitters getting new stances or working with new hitting coaches or this, that, and the other. This is how pitchers change themselves. It's simple. And we've seen it time and time again. Before Glasnow got hurt, he started throwing a hook and it was crazy. Like, and that mm-hmm. came back. I was anti Glasnow because he's a two pitch guy. I'm on until he gets a third pitch, don't want anything to do with him. Well, he developed a third pitch and he was filthy, like absolutely filthy. Maybe that's what made his arm almost fall off. I don't know. But it's like we talk about it with Paddock and he started doing it and then he got hurt. But maybe it's a bad example. But you need that third pitch, maybe some other recipe for mixing it up, as you say, is maybe not go as heavy fastball. Now you're using more sliders and changeups and less fastballs, like when Sandy Alcantara started using his mm-hmm. pitch mix yep. change.
No, that's a good midseason last year.
Yeah, okay. He's an example that actually didn't get hurt. So I'll say Sandy Alcantara is one you can definitely point to.
Giolito is the Giolito from yeah. like 2-3 years ago yeah. is the exact, because not only was it a pitch mix change, it was an organization change. Like he was with Chicago, fresh yep. start, picked up some velocity, totally redid his pitch mix. And and that was like an in-season thing too, where even 2 or 3 starts into the season, Giolito looked really good and had the pitch mix change and people bought in, and that was a league winner. So
yeah, great call there. For hitters, what do you use? Because I'm with you, pitchers, it's almost keep it simple. That's what I would say. Like, don't get too crazy yeah. with pitchers, because there's so much variation with pitchers. So hitters, what do you look at?
Honestly, the biggest thing is, like, I don't know if this is a skill or a metric or whatever, but just playing time. I think that's the biggest thing.
It's a big one,
and that's a whole game in itself, trying to pick that stuff. But basically hitters, put the ball in play, make hard contact. So strikeout rate, K percentage. And then I like to look at barrel rate for power. I think barrel rate has been proven to be a really good indicator for home runs. Yep. And then if it's 5x5, which is the question, you need something for speed. Speed is so hard to gauge, though. The one thing I would use with that is just stolen base success rate. So your stolen base is divided by your total attempts. Because, like, I always go back to, like, the Paul Goldschmidt example. Like, you may want to use sprint speed or time to first or whatever, the kind of the fancy stat cast stuff. But sometimes people just know how to read pitchers and steal bases. And Goldschmidt stole, like, 30 bases that one year and isn't really that fast. He's not slow, but he's not fast. Yeah. So the other thing with stolen base success rate is that will also dictate whether or not you have a green light, right? So, like, if you get thrown out all the time, you're obviously not going to – be allowed to steal. And so I think that number is around like 75% is kind of your not point of no return, but the kind of the break-even point is the word I'm looking for. So anybody above 75%, they're actually contributing value by running and thus may run more in the future. Anyone below 75% consistently will not. So stolen base success rate is something I would look at for speed.
And there's a good HQ metric on that too. So that's definitely something to our expected steals and stuff like that. They have some good metrics there in the speed department. Two things. Barrel rate's one of my favorite ones to look at. Like you said, that's a great one. And if it's one of those that I kind of still have questions on a hitter, I'll do barrel or home runs per barrel, barrel per home runs, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like the home run percentage, because then you can kind of tell if it's fluky or not. Because there's certain guys, like we've done it on other shows, is more often than not, I think it's like somewhere between 58 and 61%. Of like all barrels or home runs. It varies each year, but somewhere in that range more often than not. So you find that year's range, then you figure out, okay, how many did this guy do? If all of a sudden he's popping like 88%, you're like, okay, well, he got a little lucky there, apparently. Like, is he the Alex Bregman of the world? That kind of stuff. So it makes you kind of reevaluate some of those situations if some of the metrics don't line up. Another one I want to mention in pitching, if I want to bring an HQ one in here, if you want to go a little deeper, is a ball percentage. I think that's one that doesn't get talked about enough. That's guys good. That just don't throw strikes, essentially. And then I'll kind of help clear up some questions as well. So these are maybe more secondary stats to use once you kind of narrow down the players you like and you want to maybe narrow it down a little more. But I think ball percentage is a very interesting one that kind of tells a different picture of how things are going out there for a pitcher. But I like to take barrel, like home runs per barrel or whatever, and elaborate on that, because the barrel metric's phenomenal, but take it a little deeper and see how lucky a guy potentially was. Yeah. And see what, because we talk regression, that's a massive point of regression potentially when you really break it down. So something to look at as well.
Yep. Just one last thing. I know we're kind of throwing out stuff, but this is kind of more like secondary. So we kind of listen. I think if you're putting these on like a cheat sheet or something, you really only want like two or three. Like,
yeah.
You can get so many numbers on a cheat sheet, and you're in a draft and it's just like, what am I even looking at? Wow, the Angels just won.
Yeah, Iglesias just celebrated like he won the World Series.
It sounds like, yeah. Iglesias legitimately thinks he won the World Series. Oh man. Oh,
this is so funny.
That's actually really cool. One other thing that I like to look at is, and we mentioned this a lot on the pod, is swing strike rate for pitchers. I like to use it more for individual pitches, just to see like repertoire wise which pitches are the best, and that kind of ties back to my pitch mix thing. But that's also something I look at if I'm taking a deeper dive. But you can get real close with just K minus walk and a basic ERA estimator on the pitching side.
Next question here is Oregon Do 2 asks, what is going on with Quitter Castellanos? He must not like Nick Castellanos. That's my only guess. He's on pace for 20 homers. Thought he would do better in Philly with that lineup. I thought he would too, but things have not gone well for Nicky Castellanos. I'm still not worried about Nick Castellanos, so I'll tell you that much. But yeah, it's not been ideal. Let's put it that way. But I said it earlier in the show, the whole team's been struggling, and now they're all starting to hit. So maybe Nick picks up the poison there. We'll see.
If we're told, maybe Quitter Castellanos is his brother, Nicholas.
At first, I thought it's a different little
prospect. Castellanos will be just like, so it's interesting. So we were just talking about which metrics we use for hitters. Castellanos last year had a huge season, hit 309, hit 34 homers. Had a 21, I'm rounding to the nearest whole number, but 21% strikeout rate and a 10.6% barrel rate last year. This season has a 9.9% barrel rate, so basically the same as last year. Strikeout rate is up 2 points from 21% to 23%, which is well within the range of variance this early in the season. All this to say, Castellanos is going to be absolutely fine. I don't think he's going to hit 309 again. There was quite a bit of bad luck in that number. But if you told me like 270, 260, 270 the rest of the way with like maybe 20 more home runs, I think that's definitely doable. This is, if you look under the hood, like this is a very similar guy what we saw last year.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him. That ballpark gets warmer throughout the summer. Like, he's going to have some big weeks where you, like, Trevor Story, people aren't worried about anymore. Most aren't worried about Marcus Semien all of a sudden. Like, it just takes one big week to put things back into perspective. So, mm-hmm. Yep. 2 months into the season still. We got time. We have a question here in the YouTube chat before we head on out of here. Mike Genre asks, do you trust Ronzi Contreras versus Atlanta and Edward Cabrera versus Houston this week? Two good ones right there.
Yeah, two good ones. From a like a pure skill standpoint, I'd lean Cabrera, but he's facing Houston, obviously, and Justin Verlander, who does not give up runs. So, like, your potential for a win with Edward Cabrera this weekend is very low. And actually, Cabrera's second start really wasn't that dominant. Great. Like, he only struck out four, only had 10 whiffs on 99 pitches, only gave up the two hits, but a lot of good BABIP in that second start. All that to say, I would go Contreras over Cabrera this weekend. The HQ matchup tool, again, just to plug it, it's something I use all the time in my process, so I'm not just plugging it. A 0.6 rating, which is actually pretty good for Ronzi Contreras, and then Edward Cabrera gets a negative 0.6. So the HQ matchup tool prefers Contreras against Atlanta this weekend as well. So just to kind of a double check there.
Yeah, and Ronzi will be in my part of my article on Friday, if anybody's curious. So we will be mentioning him briefly. But I like his upside against the Braves team, which is a total boomer bust team right now. Like, they're all or nothing. So tread lightly, both tough matchups. But I go Contreras as well for the upside with the strikeouts. But we'll wrap it up there, Ryan. Another awesome episode in the books. So we got some bloom boards. We got some weekend matchups, more injuries, all the fun stuff and things. Before we head out of here, do you have any final thoughts for the listeners?
Oh, really fun episode. This one was great. Big. So one thing I'm looking out for, I know we talk MLB all the time, but college super regionals are this weekend. In my school, Virginia Tech, this is the furthest they've ever gotten. They're actually hosting a super regional. They play Oklahoma Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday if necessary. So I'm actually going to be watching quite a bit of college ball this weekend. I'm not a huge college baseball fan, but it's a lot of fun when it gets this late into the postseason, and obviously Omaha. So I'm going to be veering a little bit away from MLB this weekend and checking that out myself.
Yeah, no, it's definitely fun to watch, especially this time of the year. I've driven, like, Cal Poly's about an hour south of me. I've driven down there. That's where I saw Andrew Vaughn with Cal and stuff, and I'll check that out. Or go, I'm like right in the middle of like four colleges within like hour and a half away at the most. So yeah, it's fun stuff. I enjoy it. It's different baseball. It's calm. It's like minor league baseball. So it's a good time, except now it's a little better than minor league baseball, as you said.
Yeah, a little
so
more intense at this point, but yeah,
you'll have some more fun. Yeah. Like Stanford, they're hosting a regional. They mm-hmm. sold out their tickets, which doesn't happen very often. Like, that's how pumped people are for this. So
Virginia Tech sold out. It was actually like a controversy that people bought the tickets sold out in like 5 minutes, and now we're like $200 a seat just because, like,
it's awesome.
Our baseball team, our most notable, like, active player is like Chad Pinder and Packy Naughton. Guy who's been drafted, earliest draft pick ever, is Joe Saunders. Like, we're not a baseball school. So it's just really cool to kind of have this run. So we'll see.
It's awesome. We'll see how it goes. I'll be rooting for you. I got some golf to watch as well. Hopefully you make it to live in 2 weeks. Looking forward to it, but that's a whole other podcast. So we'll wrap it up there, everybody. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. I'm on Twitter at BDIndrick. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with you guys next week with another episode of Bubba and the Blue.
better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.